It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
Week number 8, just about in the books. We have one more game left on Monday night. Welcome back, everybody. This is Fade the Chalk, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here with the solo recap edition, recapping all of the action from week number 8. And look, injuries clearly not planning on slowing down anytime soon. We'll recap all that. I mean, you know the drill. We'll recap everything here on the podcast. And of course, again, one more game tonight between the Chiefs and Giants. We will see what happens. It looks like Sterling Shepard and Kadarius Toney are going to play for New York, so that is a good thing for Daniel Jones, obviously. But before we get to these games, have to tell everybody again about all the amazing content over at FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy, FTN Bets. Look, I mean, this is the best time to be a sports fan, right? NFL season, you know, pretty much in mid-season right now, halfway through the season. We have the NBA season just started a couple weeks ago. Hockey's in full swing. I mean, Chris Meaney's got a ton of great NHL content, podcasts. His betting is best, you know, his betting advice for NHL is the best you will ever find. And then, of course, we have great NBA content, right? Kyle Murray's projections, the Opto, everything. Fast Eddie Fear's rankings, Zach Graham's rankings, Zach Graham's super draft advice. Joe Metz and I doing the first look and values article every day. Then, of course, all the live streams. Every single day we have a live stream, Monday through Sunday, every single day, breaking down the slate. The Discord, that's worth it in itself because there are so many awesome people talking all day, getting you prepared and helping you become a better NBA DFS player. So make sure you're checking out FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy, and FTN Bets, especially today. Monday's a huge day for content. We have a lot of recap stuff from the NFL. Of course, there's NBA, there's NHL. So make sure you're checking it out today, FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy, and FTNBets.com. Let's get to the games here from week number 8. We'll start with the Carolina Panthers winning in Atlanta 19-13. And before we get started, Calvin Ridley, inactive for this game, stepping away from football to take care of his mental health, and I really hope everything's okay with him. Look, mental health is super, super, super important. It hits home for me, especially. So when I saw this news, my heart absolutely went out to Calvin Ridley. Football, we love football, right? It's fun, gives us some enjoyment, but it is nothing compared to taking care of your mental well-being and your mental health. So honestly, like Calvin Ridley, obviously you're not listening to this, but take your time. I mean, please take your time. You know, football will be there, but taking care of yourself comes first. So and again, I want to like appreciate Calvin Ridley for coming out and addressing it. You know, we're seeing athletes do this more and more, and it hits home. So I actually really, really appreciate it. But they were without Calvin Ridley for this game. So a lot of people probably, I don't want to say a lot of people, but there was plenty of people that probably, you know, streamed Russell Gage. He doesn't even get a target in this game. I mean, the Falcons offense wasn't on the field much. They struggled. Kyle Pitts with a dud, 2-for-13 on 6 targets, had a pretty bad drop. It was really when they were on offense, the backfield. And it was interesting. I mean, this time last year, or that last week rather, it looked like Cordell Patterson had taken over this Atlanta backfield, but in this game, it goes back to, it's pretty much as close to a 50-50 split as you can possibly get, right? You look at the snaps, Mike Davis with 34 snaps, Cordell Patterson played 32. Davis ran 16 pass routes to Cordell Patterson's 15. They were both targeted 5 times. They both had 5 catches. They both had 9 carries, but Cordell Patterson got the touchdown from about 10 yards out or so after making a few tacklers miss, so yeah, I mean, Mike Davis was probably dropped in a handful of leagues, but somebody I would definitely look to pick up. They clearly, you know, made an effort to get him more involved. And maybe that was just a one-week thing where, you know, Patterson was running well and Davis was a little bit banged up at the end of that Miami game last week. But this is clearly still a 50-50 split, so it looks like we were wrong. I mean, Patterson's still a guy you're starting most weeks, but Davis is still back in that flex consideration after this week's usage. Whatever it's worth, he got the start. Doesn't really mean much, but it was clearly a 50-50 split. And Davis ran well, 9 carries for 44 yards. So, For Carolina, the offensive struggles, at least in the passing game, continue. I mean, Sam Darnold has 129 passing yards, no touchdowns in this game. He leaves late after scrambling, and I believe he's in the concussion protocol, did not return. You know, P.J. Walker came in and finished the game. We'll have to monitor Darnold's status. I mean, he had 66 yards rushing, but he got hit in the head on a... It was a clean hit, actually, but it was like a... He didn't get hit in the head, but he got hit so hard that his helmet came off and did not return. We will see what happens. I mean, this passing game right now just doesn't have it. I mean, Sam Darnold has been... You look at his game log, he's been under 210 yards in four straight games. So when your quarterback isn't even reaching... I mean, he's been under 200 in three of those games. So when your quarterback's not even reaching 200 passing yards... Yeah, DJ Moore is going to struggle. He should have had a touchdown this game. Darnold actually threw a really, it was kind of a slot fade to the back of the end zone. DJ Moore couldn't get his second foot down, should have been a touchdown. I mean, the targets are what you want, right? He had 8 of the 24 targets. He continues to be one of the more targeted players in the league, still among the league leaders in first read targets. I think he was trailing only Cooper Kupp in that category ahead of this week, and I'd imagine he's still top 5 going into week 9. But, yeah, I mean, we saw the ceiling and looked like he could be a top 10 receiver the first couple weeks of the season. And while you're still starting him each week and he still has top 15 upside, I don't think top 10 is going to be in his range of outcomes if this offense is going to continue to throw for 150 yards max. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Matt Rhule talked about it a couple weeks ago. They said they wanted to get, you know, established to run more and run the football more. And that's been the case with Chuba Hubbard. He had 24 carries in this game. Royce Freeman had 6. I mean, their running backs combined for 38 carries in this game. And yeah, they had the ball for a lot more than Atlanta, but clearly they don't trust their quarterback play right now. And yeah, I mean, I guess there's still a potential chance of a Deshaun Watson trade. I'm not even thinking about that. Again, I'm not like freaking out about DJ Moore, but you have to, you know, dial back the expectations. And again, this is coming from somebody who is as high on DJ Moore as anybody in the industry. And while I still think he's amazing, an amazing player and everything, I don't know if he's going to have top 10 upside if this offense is throwing for 150 yards each game. Now, they will get McCaffrey back, and that should open things up a little bit. But it's they're clearly focusing on running the football and trying to play good defense. And they got Shaq Thompson back, who's been probably their best defensive player. So I don't think that's going to change, especially when Christian McCaffrey's back for the Carolina Panthers. This game was ugly for a while, but the Bills' offense kind of sort of eventually gets there. They end up winning against Miami 26-11. What was this game? 3-3 at halftime. The Bills' offense was struggling. And then the second half, Josh Allen started to do Josh Allen things. Finishes with 249 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, 8 carries for 55 yards, and a rushing touchdown. He's good. Cole Beasley, nice game from him. First game without Dawson Knox. 10 receptions for 110 yards on a team-high 13 targets. And here's the thing with Cole Beasley. He's not their best receiver, obviously, but when they need to get offense going and they need quick hitting, move the ball, get the offense in rhythm, it's Cole Beasley. Like, that's the guy they go to, and then that kind of sets up everything else. And that was the case in this game. So, a good game from Beasley. I don't know if it's, like, 100% due to the absence of Dawson Knox, because it's not like Dawson Knox is getting 7 to 10 targets every game. It was more like 4 and 5. But a good game from Beasley nonetheless. Emmanuel Sanders with a dud. I mean, no catches on 4 targets. Did not expect that, especially against a man-heavy Miami Dolphins defense. We did see the Bills in their first game without Dawson Knox. They did go a lot more 10 personnel in this game, which I expected, right? I believe in the first half they went 10 personnel like 40% of the time. Then they went back towards more 12 in the second half. But as a result, you see Gabriel Davis. I mean, 4 catches for 29 yards and a touchdown on 5 targets. I talked about a potential... you know, outing from Gabriel Davis on the DFS podcast because I expected them to go a lot more empty and a lot more 4 wide receiver sets without Dawson Knox. And that was the case. Now, I'm not saying you go pick up Gabriel Davis, but he does play 32 snaps in this game, 18 pass routes and 5 targets. So if you're in a deeper league, I mean, there's more teams on bye next week. I think Washington, Detroit, Seattle. So there's some receivers there that you're going to need to replace. In deeper leagues, I mean, with Dawson Knox probably going to be out again, they have Jacksonville next week. Yeah, I mean, Gabriel Davis might not be the worst, like, you know, more desperation flex. I mean, there's worse options and worse offenses to choose the number three or four receiver on as a bye week fill-in than Gabriel Davis, who we've seen be a touchdown scorer during his NFL career. Tommy Sweeney did dominate the snaps, for what it's worth. He played 60 snaps, 60 of the 73 offensive snaps in this game. Ran 34 pass routes. He had four targets. I was not on him in DFS. Thought he was a trap. He'll be on that streaming radar until Dawson Knox is back, though. You do like the involvement and the opportunity in the routes, and that's all that matters, especially when you're on an offense that's good. And then the Bills tried to establish the run early in this game, which is probably why their offense struggled out of the gate, but they couldn't do anything. Singletary, 7 carries for 28 yards. Zach Moss, 8 carries for 19 yards. Moss is the one, though, heavily involved in the passing game. 7 targets, caught 6 of them for 39 yards. He played more the fourth quarter than Devin Singletary. Still don't feel great starting either player, but they have Jacksonville next week again, so we've seen when the Bills are blowing teams out, it tends to be Zach Moss getting the work and the touchdowns. So I think Zach Moss is actually a pretty solid flex next week as the Bills go to Jacksonville in a 15, I would imagine, point spread for the Bills on the road. Going to Miami, Devontae Parker finally returned, and he was the guy here. I mean, it was him and Jalen Waddle. Parker, 11 targets, caught eight of them for 85 yards. Early in the game, it was all Devontae Parker, who they were kind of going at Levi Wallace in this game. Wherever Levi Wallace was, they were throwing at him, and a lot of that was Devontae Parker and Jalen Waddle, who combined for, 23 of their 37 targets in this game. I mean, Waddle continues to be targeted at a massive rate, especially with Tua Tagovailoa, right? Double-digit targets, he had 12 today. So 12 targets for Waddle today. Looking at his game log now for Jalen Waddle, that gives him double-digit targets, I believe, in, three or two of his last couple. So, let's see. Two of his last three games, he has double-digit targets. During that span, he has 33 total targets. So the volume's there. But interestingly enough, after just watching him make a ton of huge plays deep down the field and long plays at Alabama, you look this year, and Jalen Waddle's being used very close to the line of scrimmage, and there's not a lot of deep passing plays. He's currently sporting the fifth lowest yards before the catch per reception mark in the NFL at 4.2 yards before the catch per reception. His average depth of target among wide receivers so far this season is, 4th worst in the NFL at, 6.1? So that is taking away from his ceiling, but the floor has been really good in PPR leagues, like I said. Getting, 10 targets close to that every game. Miami's clearly been a team that has been really not shy of abandoning the run. Now, the schedule does open up for them. Like, they have Houston next week. So, but again, I think you're starting Waddle pretty comfortably as a wide receiver 3. And Devontae Parker finds himself in that range as well, coming off a nice game, first game back from injury. For the backfield, again, Malcolm Brown on IR. So you probably felt a little bit better starting Myles Gaskin despite the matchup being terrible. The production wasn't great, right? I mean, 12 carries for 36 yards, 3 catches for 19 yards, but the involvement's what we want for Myles Gaskin, right? That's why he's been up and down this year, is because it's been Malcolm Brown getting goal line work in 2-minute drill, Savon Ahmed getting work, but Gaskin plays 40 snaps. Savon Ahmed and Patrick Laird combined for 26 snaps. He runs 22 pass routes. Ahmed and Laird combined for 14 pass routes. So the usage is trending up for Gaskin, and like I said, the schedule's opening up. You're probably starting him as a low-end RB2 next week against Houston, the matchup that just keeps on giving, obviously. So, again, Malcolm Brown on IR, so he's going to miss at least the next 2 weeks. And Gaskin, I believe, I'm trying to see who they play after Houston next week. So Houston, Baltimore, and the Jets. So those are three. I mean, Baltimore's been pretty bad against them. We saw what the Bengals did to them last week. So Myles Gaskin in that, 15 to 18 RB range, probably closer to 18 going forward. And that'll pretty much do it from this game. Gesicki had a 40-yard catch and 2-point conversion. Other than that, it was pretty disappointing, but this is Buffalo in Buffalo. We didn't expect Tua to have a good game, and he didn't. So there's that. San Francisco 33, Chicago 22. This game had like a 39 implied total, the lowest of the slate. And of course, it just sails past that. A lot to talk about in this game, though. Jimmy Garoppolo had 2 rushing touchdowns, because of course he did. But Elijah Mitchell, talked about it as somebody to trade for. I went on Justin Boone's podcast last week and said this could be a, my bold call was he'd be a top 10 running back rest of the season. Off to a good start, 18 carries, 137 yards, and a touchdown. Again, was not involved in the passing game, didn't have a catch or a target. He doesn't play on third downs. That's the only bad thing about Elijah Mitchell right now. He is, I don't think he's played on a single third down over the last 2 weeks. That is clearly Jamichael Hasty's role. But if he's getting 18 to 20 carries every game, he's going to be a very strong RB2, and he's looked really good the last 2 weeks. He's shown really good vision. He's in a run-first offense. Trey Sermon, I believe, did not play a snap once again for the second consecutive week for San Francisco. Yeah, he didn't. It was all Hasty and all Mitchell. And again, I talked about it. The schedule for Elijah Mitchell is another reason why I just love him the rest of the season. So this was a fine, an okay matchup. It was obviously enhanced by Khalil Mack being out. But you look at it going forward now for Elijah Mitchell, he's got, coming up, the Rams, okay, not a great spot. Then Jacksonville, Minnesota, Seattle, Cincinnati, Atlanta, Tennessee, and Houston to end the season. I mean, it's probably going to be a lot harder to do so now, but if you can do it in any way, shape, or form, go trade for Elijah Mitchell and enjoy a league-winning running back, because that's exactly what he is. After spending all the fab on him and after the first week of the season, it is clearly going to pay off for Elijah Mitchell. Deebo Samuel had over 150 yards again in this game. It was, you know, an inch or two away from another touchdown. I mean, the guy's been unbelievable. He really has. 9 targets, leads the team again. He had 9 of the 27 targets. So you look at it now, Deebo Samuel has had at least a 26% target share in every game this season for San Francisco. He is getting literally like Devontae Adams type usage in this passing game. So you're starting him every week. I will say, though, maybe this is now the time to pick up Brandon Ayuk, because he actually led the receivers in snaps with 50 and pass routes. He had 7 targets in this game, caught 4 of them for 45 yards and a 2-point conversion. And it's, you still probably don't want to start him, but if things can break right for Brandon Ayuk, we've seen he can play at a very, very high level in this league. So you're not going to be able to find a ton of players off waivers to put on your bench with that type of ceiling. So the usage trending up, the production was good enough to where I think we can warrant, you know, adding Brandon Ayuk back and putting him back on our fantasy rosters. I will say, though, George Kittle expected to be back in week number 9. So the San Francisco looks like they'll get their all-pro tight end back next week. For the Bears, best game of the career for Justin Fields. 19 for 27 passing, 175 yards, and a touchdown. Did throw an interception in this game. But he clearly showed in this game the playmaking ability he has. 10 carries for 103 yards and an additional score. And the rushing touchdown he had on 4th and inches was incredible. It was like an RPO, ran to the outside, defender collapsed and had him covered, made like multiple defenders miss, and then just sprinted back to the left side of the field and scored. It was one of the more impressive touchdowns you will see this year. I mean, it just showed the upside that we've all been waiting for from Justin Fields. And I thought the touchdown pass he had in this game to Jesse James, throwing on the run, running to his left as a right-handed thrower, absolute bullet to the side of the end zone. So Justin Fields showed me a lot in this game. Obviously, I've been super high on Justin Fields for months. Loved what I saw from Fields in this game. And if the rushing continues, he's going to be on that streaming radar. For the backfield, Damien Williams left this game with a knee injury, did not return. Khalil Herbert handles 25 of the, let's see, 28 running back touches in this game. I mean, he was already, you know, trending towards taking Damien Williams' work anyway. But now Williams is hurt. Montgomery won't be back probably till week 11. So Khalil Herbert, again, in that same range we talked about with Myles Gaskin, probably just below Elijah Mitchell for me. But Herbert will present some passing upside. He's not been heavily involved in the passing game, but he at least will be playing on third downs and getting some targets. And then the passing game, Darnell Mooney leads the team in targets again with 9. I mean, this is now like the third game that Fields has started where Darnell Mooney has led the team in targets. 6 for 64. And then another dud from Allen Robinson, 3 for 21. He's droppable. He's been droppable. I've talked about it. Darnell Mooney, for whatever reason, he is the number one target for Justin Fields. So Mooney needs to be added, I think, if he hasn't already. And it sounds crazy, but like at this point, if you have Allen Robinson on your team and Darnell Mooney's on waivers, do you just make that switch? It's crazy to talk about. It's crazy to think about, but Robinson just has not produced this year. Not one bit. Pittsburgh 15, Cleveland 10, a defensive battle here. Najee Harris, 26 carries, 91 yards and a touchdown, adds 3 catches for 29 yards. Starting him every week, Deontay Johnson, another game with double-digit targets. That's now 600 in his last 601 games. Joking, but you're starting him every week, obviously, as well. I want to talk about Pat Freiermuth, though. Eric Ebron ruled out in this game, so Freiermuth became a popular streamer, maybe even a back-end tight end one for a lot of people. I think he was targeted on like 4 of Pittsburgh's first 5 pass attempts in this game or something like that. Ends up with 7 targets, caught 4 of them for 44 yards, and a very, very impressive touchdown in the back of the end zone. They did use a lot of Freiermuth and Zach Gentry in this game. Gentry actually had 5 targets himself, caught 3 of them for 39 yards. I mean, we saw Freiermuth kind of emerge last week in that game against Seattle, or maybe 2 weeks ago because they had a bye, where he set season highs in snaps and routes and targets, even with Ebron active. And it's hard to believe that he will just go back to playing limited snaps after what he's done the last couple weeks. You look at his production in this game, the snaps and routes, I think he ran a route on like 24 of Roethlisberger's 36 dropbacks. So it's good enough for a tight end, especially one that's as talented as Pat Freiermuth. So I think he needs to be, I think he's borderline a must add. Given the state of the tight end position, given the involvement, given the fact that obviously no Juju Smith-Schuster, and it's not like Chase Claypool has been garnering massive targets. Like you could easily make the case that after Deontay Johnson, Freiermuth is the next target up in this offense right now, especially in a short passing offense like Pittsburgh always is. Yeah, go out and add Pat Freiermuth right now. For Cleveland, Baker Mayfield did play in this game. Clearly not 100%. Didn't do anything fantasy-wise. The receivers didn't do anything fantasy-wise. Landry had 10 targets of the 31 targets. Odell Beckham had 1 catch for 6 yards. Odell Beckham probably on the cusp of being droppable as well. Nick Chubb returned this game, 16 carries to D'Ernest Johnson's 4. Johnson gets the touchdown from about 5 or 6 yards out. And again, it's like anytime he gets the ball, his cutback ability is really impressive. That's what he showcased on that touchdown run. But Nick Chubb did handle 16 of the 21 running back carries in this game. So, yeah, I mean, the numbers weren't great for anybody on Cleveland's offense. Their touchdown in this game, they even scored. Oh, it was D'Ernest Johnson. So not much from this game. Johnson's still somebody I would hold right now, until Kareem Hunt's back. But again, he's on IR, so we'll have to wait and see on that. And then I would have very little confidence starting anybody on Cleveland's passing game right now. If I were to choose somebody, it would be Landry. And maybe David Njoku or one of these tight ends gets traded, maybe to Green Bay or some team before Tuesday's trade deadline. And maybe that helps feel better about Austin Hooper, but they just run so many 2 and 3 tight end sets that it's hard to feel great about anybody from the Cleveland Browns. Let's move on to me being an idiot, because I picked on this podcast the Detroit Lions not only win, but win in overtime. I guess I underestimated how bad they are. They lose to the Eagles 44-6 at home. This was a weird game. I mean, the Eagles dominated from the get-go. And the first time all season, and it's the first game without Miles Sanders, the Eagles say, you know what, we're going to commit to the run. We're going to establish a run. And, I mean, how it was working, I mean, why wouldn't they continue to do so? Here's the problem. And I don't take a lot of victory laps, but I'm taking one here. I said Kenneth Gainwell was an absolute trap this week. Not so much in redraft and season-long leagues. Like, if you picked him up, you probably felt good starting him as a flex. But in DFS, I wanted nothing to do with Gainwell. But I didn't expect it to be because of this. I expected him to lose some goal line touches and overall carries, but I still expected him to be involved, right? And he just wasn't, man. So you look at the snap, like Boston Scott got the start, and it was trending that way because we saw him working with the first team in warmups on Sunday morning. He gets, I believe, the first 7 carries to open this game, right? Got the start, got the first 7 carries, played around 45% of the snaps. And then Jordan Howard, who's caught up from the practice squad, he was even working with the first team in practice over the week. He gets the next handful of carries. and he gets 12 carries. Same with Boston Scott. Both convert two short yardage touchdowns, which was a concern for Kenneth Gainwell. We didn't expect him to get the goal line carries, especially after activating Jordan Howard. But we thought Kenneth Gainwell would at least be on the field in the first, you know, with the starters and early in the game. And we at least expected Kenneth Gainwell to get targets in the passing game. But Jalen Hurts in a game, and this was, once the Eagles went up 17-0, you knew it was bad for Kenneth Gainwell, right? And the Eagles got up early. They stayed up. And in this game, I mean, Kenneth Gainwell, he had one carry in the first half, and it came late in the second quarter. He played six snaps with the starters. The rest of his snaps, I think there was 14 other snaps, he played with the backups, and he got 12 of his 13 carries came on the final two drives. They were meaningless carries, just up the middle, running the clock out. So Kenneth Gainwell, who was this amazing pass-catching running back at Memphis, he's been the Eagles' pass-catching running back all season long, he got 12 carries, or 13 carries. If you told me on Friday that Kenneth Gainwell was getting 13 carries, I would have played him. I would have been all over him in DFS. But they came in the way we didn't expect him to come. They came in the end of the game on the two drives, just running the clock out. It was honestly one of the most disappointing storylines of the week for fantasy. Because Gainwell with Miles Sanders out, a lot of teams need running back help. Really viable flex candidate in PPR leagues, and it's just the Eagles didn't go to him. Very concerning that they didn't trust Gainwell and went right to Boston Scott and Jordan Howard. So, I mean, Boston Scott, if he wasn't added, he'll probably be on the waiver wire podcast come Tuesday with D-Bro and I. And Gainwell's probably droppable. Like, if they didn't go to him now, especially after Howard and Scott ran well and converted their touchdowns, like, why would they go back to Gainwell? Now, there will be some games where the Eagles are trailing, and that should be Gainwell. But man, it is tough to feel good about that. And it's obviously a massive disappointment. Because we know he's not going to get short yardage work. Plus, even if he did get some snaps there, Jalen Hurts is a candidate to run for touchdowns. And he didn't get any passing downs work in this game. Again, I understand Jalen Hurts only threw the ball 14 times in this game. And Hurts, obviously, massive fantasy disappointment when Boston Scott and Howard combined for four touchdowns from 5 yards out each. There's not much left for Jalen Hurts. Plus, the Eagles had a defensive touchdown this game. So, obviously, better days are ahead for Jalen Hurts. Dallas Goedert must start. Seven targets. He had 7 of the 16 targets in this game. 6 for 72 for Dallas Goedert in a game where Hurts only had 103 passing yards. You feel great about Dallas Goedert. I mean, not so much for DeVonta Smith. One catch for 15 yards on 3 targets. I don't think he's droppable yet. In 10-team leagues, absolutely he is. In 12-team leagues, I'm probably not feeling great about starting him right now, but I'm not quite dropping him yet. Let's go to Detroit. I mean, not much here. They got blown out. Jamal Williams is inactive for this game, but DeAndre Swift was a massive disappointment. 12 carries, 27 yards, 5 catches for 24 yards. I expected better, especially against a zone-heavy Eagles defense that have been giving up a ton of production to pass-catching running backs, but I mean, the Lions defense, or Lions offense, rather, was not on the field very often. Great game from Hockenson, though. Caught 10 of 11 targets for 89 yards. The Eagles keep giving it up to tight ends. I thought there was a chance Darius Slay would be on Hockenson for this game. He wasn't. Wasn't at all, really. So, what are you going to do? The Lions, not good. Khalif Raymond didn't catch a pass. Amon-Ra, 3 for 46. Like, you're not starting anybody but Hockenson and DeAndre Swift in fantasy from this team. Rams 38, Houston 22. I mean, Stafford, another 300-yard, 3-touchdown game. Cooper Kupp, another 100-yard, 1-touchdown game. Robert Woods scored twice, but he only had 35 yards. Rushing touchdown and a receiving. Like, I just don't have anything to say about the Rams. Darrell Henderson had a great game, 14 carries for 90 yards and a touchdown, adds a receiving touchdown. The snaps, obviously very, very misleading if you're just looking at them, on the surface. The first half, like, when the Rams starters were in the first half, it was all Darrell Henderson like it's been. You know, he played like the major, like 70% of the snaps or whatever, like he always does. And then it was like the third quarter, and Sony Michel started to get work, and it was like, okay, they're just, you know, this game's over. And then I don't think Darrell Henderson played a single snap in the fourth quarter, which I understand we always want our players to score the most points as possible. But if you have Darrell Henderson on your team, given his injury history, He already got you like 21 fantasy points. Cool. Don't let him play the fourth quarter. You didn't want to see that. So they go to Tennessee. I think they host Tennessee or they go to Tennessee next week. So, I mean, the Rams are ridiculous. I will say, though, Tyler Higbee, massive, massive disappointment here. 3 for 25 on 3 targets against a team that has been the worst in the NFL against tight ends. I mean, Higbee's going to be up and down. I understand the offense is as good as any offense in the league, but when Van Jefferson continues to make plays, who, by the way, in deeper leagues, Van Jefferson needs to be added. I mean, DeSean Jackson's on the trade block. Doesn't matter. Jefferson was playing way more than him anyway. But he's a deep threat in this offense. He's getting like 6 targets a game. And he's good, man. He's a good player. But when you have Jefferson and then Cooper Kupp and Woods are obviously the 1 and 2 in this offense. And then Henderson's getting a ton of touches. I mean, there's not much for Tyler Higbee. For Houston, Brandon Cooks, 6 for 83 and a touchdown. We'll see if Tyrod Taylor is back next week. The backfield's a mess. I mean, David Johnson, you thought they would, you know, feature him with Mark Ingram gone, but it was Lindsey, it was David Johnson. Then the game got out of hand, and it was Scotty Phillips and Rex Burkhead in garbage time. You're not starting anybody from Houston outside of Brandon Cooks. And we can move on. It's that simple. This game was crazy. Tennessee 34, Indianapolis 31. Carson Wentz gets off to a great start in this game. Couple touchdowns early, ultimately finishes with 3 touchdowns, 2 awful interceptions because that's the Carson Wentz experience. His touchdowns go to Jack Doyle, then 2 go to Michael Pittman, who definitely want to talk about here. I mean, Michael Pittman, we talked about on the podcast a lot last week. It was on the trade podcast where Deber mentioned him as a trade candidate, and then we talked about him on the DFS podcast because on FanDuel and DraftKings, he has remained way too cheap for weeks now. Career day for Michael Pittman. Career high 10 catches on a career high 15 targets. Had 86 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, Michael Pittman, I talked about this with D-Bro, how it just like every week he's like mossing somebody and his highlight receptions. He's like among the league leaders in difficult catches and stuff like that. And he did it again in this game. He had a ridiculous like on 3rd and 16 in the 4th quarter with time running out. Wentz throws pretty much a Hail Mary at midfield and Michael Pittman, again, goes over the top of the defender, makes a play. He now has a 57.1% contested catch rate on deep targets this year. It's a very impressive number. He is top 10 in deep receptions this year. I mean, he's been amazing. He's now seen double-digit targets 3 times this season. He's averaging nearly 8 targets per game. And the reason Deber brought him up, other than the fact that he's an incredible player, oh my goodness. Wow. Per Adam Schefter, the Denver Broncos have just traded Von Miller to the Los Angeles Rams. So Von Miller, Jalen Ramsey, and you already have the 2 best defensive players in the NFL, and then you just add Von Miller. Obviously, the Rams are going for it, but yeah, good luck. Wow, I'm sorry. That just completely threw me off with that trade. Back to Michael Pittman, though. other than the fact that he's an awesome, awesome player, a superstar, you know, caliber player, looks like he's trending towards. Other than that, Deber mentioned him as a trade candidate because of the schedule, right? Starting this week, it was a great matchup. He goes off. They get the Jets next week. Then Jacksonville. Tough spot against Buffalo. But then Tampa Bay. We've seen their secondary be depleted and struggle. Houston. New England, Arizona, Vegas. Like, Michael Pittman is a top 20 receiver rest of the season. T.Y. Hilton has been banged up since returning and making his debut. He's in the concussion protocol, I believe, now. He left this game. I mean, Michael Pittman is clearly Wentz's guy. Wentz is actually, and I talk about this, going into this game, Wentz was 2nd in the NFL in deep completion percentage. If you watch Carson Wentz play, that's a Michael Pittman stat. That is not a Carson Wentz stat. That's Michael Pittman making plays every single week for Carson Wentz. I become even more and more impressed with Michael Pittman every single week. He is awesome. Borderline top 20 fantasy receiver the rest of the season. Jonathan Taylor continues to play well. He now has 110 scrimmage yards and a touchdown in, I think, 5 straight games. He has 70 rushing yards and a touchdown and then 3 catches for 52 yards. I will say, and this is somebody with Jonathan Taylor on a lot of teams, you got lucky with the touchdown. It was another patented Carson Wentz underthrow that leads to a pass interference call, put him down at the one, and Taylor ran it in to send this game into overtime. But Marlon Mack only played one snap in this game. Naheem Hines only had one carry in this game. Hines did still operate as a two-minute drill running back, but as awesome as Taylor is, like, it still gets to the point where it's like, Frank Reich, why are you going away from him? I think he had one touch on two overtime drives. And the overtime interception that went through, he forced it into double coverage to Michael Pittman. I understand Michael Pittman's been making plays for you. Jonathan Taylor was wide open on a 5-yard check down in the middle of the field. Probably would have got 20-plus yards. There was nobody near him. But still, Taylor's awesome. He's got the Jets on a short week next week. Yeah, that should be fun. Still can't believe Von Miller joins Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. Good luck opposing offenses. All right, moving right along to the last 1 o'clock game. How about the New York Jets? 34-31 victory over the Cincinnati Bengals. Mike White making plays for the Jets. How about 405 passing yards, 3 scores, as 2 interceptions? I mean, there's always a crazy game and a crazy performance from a player each week. This was it. I mean, are they going back to Zach Wilson? I mean, it's a short week, so Zach Wilson's probably not playing this week anyway. But I don't know, man. If Mike White continues to play well, who knows? But the Jets with an upset victory here. I got to talk about Michael Carter, though. I am taking the victory lap here. All week I talked about Michael Carter as the better play over Kenneth Gainwell, as an incredible play on DraftKings. He was in my value article. And he goes off, absolutely off in this game. He touches the ball 24 times for 172 total yards and a touchdown. I mean, he is trending toward his usage is trending the last 2 weeks. He's looking like an awesome player, which he was coming out of North Carolina. They're finally using him in the passing game. So the last 2 weeks, or Carter ran 32 pass routes on Sunday, third most in the NFL among all running backs in week 8. The last 2 weeks, only DeAndre Swift has run more pass routes than Michael Carter's 58. During that same span, the Jets have lined him up out wide around 14% of the time. And Mike White is looking for him, right? I mean, the last 2 weeks, 50.6% of Mike White's pass attempts have come with a short variety, so it's 0 to 9 yards. And nearly 20% of his passes have come behind the line of scrimmage. That's the 8th highest rate in the league during that span. So we're getting a ton of not just work from Michael Carter because of that, but even Ty Johnson, who was active in this game, only had 4 carries to Carter's 15, but he adds 5 catches for 71 yards and a touchdown. So on a short week, if Corey Davis can't get back in the lineup, yeah, I mean, Ty Johnson's probably not the worst PPR flex either. So yeah, Michael Carter, though, like, I'm trying to determine where he ranks this season because the Jets' offense is still going to be bad, right? They're not going to score 34 points, maybe not again this year. But, I mean, if they're serviceable enough, I mean, Carter's going to be, I don't know, 15 to 17 in terms of running back rankings the rest of the season. He looked great in this game against a Bengals run defense that, I talked about it, they've given up the second most receptions per game to running backs entering this week, but they were really good at stopping the run between the tackles. But Carter goes for over 5 yards of carry against them. And then he obviously adds a ton in the receiving game, which he's done the last 2 weeks, so you have to feel great about Michael Carter, especially because I feel like a lot of teams probably have him as a flex right now, so you feel great about that. Jamison Crowder, with Corey Davis out, has 9 targets, caught 8 for 84 yards. He'll be on the, you know, low-end wide receiver 3 flex radar in PPR leagues if Corey Davis can't play. Again, not that Jamison Crowder, you know, projects as a number one wide receiver for a team, but if Corey Davis is out, he will be this team's number one wide receiver. And they face the Colts on a short week, who have been absolutely destroyed by number one receivers. A.J. Brown got them last week after they've been giving it up all week long or all season long. Yes, Jameson Crowder's not A.J. Brown, but the overall opportunity for him to be this team's wide receiver one will be there in a great matchup. So keep an eye on Jameson Crowder as well. For the Bengals, Joe Mixon, not the most efficient game, but he scores twice in this game. Good to see the passing game work come back. It's been very inconsistent, the passing game for Joe Mixon. 1 week it's Samaje Perine playing all the third downs and getting receptions. But Mixon had a couple like targets from inside the 5. He had a couple carries from inside the 5. So 18 total touches, 2 touchdowns against a Jets team that continues to give up multiple touchdowns to running backs every single week. Not an efficient game from Jamar Chase, 3 for 32 on 9 targets, had a couple drops. But he does give you another touchdown. And then T. Higgins, 4 for 97, used down the field a lot more in this game, which was very encouraging. He was my favorite buy low going into the week. The schedule's not great for the Bengals receivers, but I still like trading for T. Higgins. Joe Burrow, another good game. By the way, I just realized I sped past the Titans in that last game. So we'll go back to the Titans real quick. A.J. Brown, huge game. Julio didn't play. But the storyline is Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry was seen, you know, with his cleat off in that game, did come back in. Then we get the report this morning that Derrick Henry is facing a potential season-ending injury, which is awful. I mean, seems like we can't catch a break with these injuries, especially at running back. So, I mean, the Titans are probably going to go super pass-heavy the rest of the season. A.J. Brown's your best player. Julio, if he's back. You don't have a running back on your roster right now. That's going to add anywhere close to the presence that Derrick Henry gave you on the ground. The trade deadline is on Tuesday, November 2nd. There was a report that they're going to work out Adrian Peterson. My guess is whoever they bring in is going to be the number one running back over everybody they have right now. So whether that's Adrian Peterson, whether that's Tevin Coleman via trade, Ronald Jones via trade, who else could potentially be on the block? You know, whoever they bring in, I think they're going to have as their starting running back. But this is going to have to be a different Titans offense. You know, Derrick Henry gets 25 touches in his sleep. Obviously, whoever the running back is not getting that work. So this hurts the entire offense, obviously, right? One of the best players in the NFL. And it's like, it's weird to see Derrick Henry being injured. We just haven't seen that. And, like, I don't know if it has anything to do with his workload. Like, yes, Derrick Henry's gotten more work than anybody the last handful of years. But it could have just been a fluke injury. So, it sucks. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the Titans bring in. I imagine they bring somebody in. And, like, it stinks that they're in the same division as the Colts, because Marlon Mack would obviously be the ideal trade target. But I don't see a way, especially after the Colts waived Jordan Wilkins. I don't see a scenario where they say, oh, you lost Derrick Henry. We just lost you in overtime in a huge divisional game. Here, take Marlon Mack from us. We'd be shocked if that happens, but keep an eye on that. The Titans will obviously be bringing somebody in to help with that running game. To the 4 o'clock games, the Patriots with a nice win over the Chargers, 27-24. Damien Harris gets the volume in this game against a bad Chargers run defense. 23 carries for 80 yards and a score. Had a second touchdown called back from like 15 yards out via a holding penalty. Could have been an even better game. Ramondre Stevenson was was active in this game. 8 carries for 25 yards. Adds a reception in this game. I don't have much from this game, or from this team, or from this game, actually. I mean, Harris got the volume. When the Patriots are in games or not trailing, he's going to get 18 to 20 carries every single week. And he's got a great chance of scoring a touchdown. If they get behind, he's going to stink. It's just how it is with Damien Harris. It's nothing new. I'm not breaking any news to you. Jacoby Myers had 9 targets. That's good. He got in the end zone, but it was on a 2-point conversion again. They're giving him chances, though. He had a couple end zone targets in this game. One Mac Jones slightly overthrew. He's in that, like, again, in that same kind of Jalen Waddle range, wide receiver 3, flex. Not a huge ceiling, obviously. And Mac Jones played well in the first half of this game and then really struggled, missed a lot of throws. The passing game, the Chargers pass defense is really good. I mean, their corners are playing well. Derwin James is obviously great. Their pass rush is solid. So I didn't expect a huge game from him. And then Hunter Henry, 1 catch for 33 yards, did not get revenge, did not score for the 5th straight game against his former team, but he's in that streaming radar at tight end. Bad game from Justin Herbert in the Chargers offense here. Herbert, really one of his worst games in a while. Missed a lot of throws, had a terrible interception that led to a pick 6. 223 yards, 2 touchdowns. One goes to Keenan Allen, who had 11 targets to lead the team. Hopefully you bought low on him. He was somebody that Deaver and I talked about. Austin Eckler, hip injury, didn't practice Thursday or Friday, but he was active in this game. Wasn't really limited. 11 carries for 64 yards and a score. Add 6 catches on 10 targets for 60 yards, starting him every week. And then another bad game from Mike Williams, 2 for 19 on 5 targets. I mean, the Chargers offense obviously wasn't great in this game, but I wonder if it's fair to say that Mike Williams, in fact, is not going to be a top 15 receiver. I mean, maybe top 15, but not a great spot. And I kind of talked about it in the DFS podcast where I wondered if J.C. Jackson would just kind of be on Mike Williams in this game because Williams is on the boundaries on the perimeter. And J.C. Jackson has shadowed a lot in this so far this season. And the Colts, or the Chargers, why do I keep saying the Colts? The Patriots play a lot of man. So in matchups like that, it could hurt Mike Williams. And they get Darius Slay next week. So Darius Slay has actually been not exactly shadowing a ton, but he has shadowed this year. And he's been playing corner at an elite level this year. So I think Mike Williams shouldn't be viewed as a wide receiver one anymore like he was, you know, the first 6 weeks of the season. Still in that wide receiver two range because the offense is so good and he's still a great player, but tempering expectations a little bit for Mike Williams. And yeah, I mean, even if Eckler was inactive, I wouldn't have trusted a Chargers running back in this game. So, yeah. Seattle rolls over Jacksonville at home, 31-7. Welcome to the Tyler Lockett experience. 4 or 5 straight dud games. You knew the huge game was coming. You had a little bit less confidence it was coming because the situation with Geno Smith rather than Russell Wilson, but it came. 12 catches on 13 targets for 142 yards for Tyler Lockett. Metcalf only has 6 for 43, but he scores twice. Geno completed like his first 17 passes in this game. Ultimately has 195 yards and 2 scores. Adds a rushing touchdown. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars are bad. Their defense is bad. Their offense is bad. We'll see if Russell Wilson comes back. Sounds like he will. Just a matter of when. But it's good to see that in good matchups. Like, Geno's still good enough to where Tyler Lockett and Metcalf can still have really good games and good matchups. Because, yes, Lockett was bad last week on Monday night against the Saints. But it's not like it was a stellar matchup. This was a stellar matchup. And it was good to see not only Lockett produce, but be involved after not being part of the offense the last couple weeks at all. For the backfield, Alex Collins was active, but a lot of running backs get work here for the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, we know Collins has been dealing with the groin, and we know Rashad Penny's back. But in this game, I mean, Collins, 27 snaps, lead the team. Homer at 16, Rashad Penny at 11. Collins leads the team with 10 carries, but I don't know if we're going to get that volume we saw like since that Rams game on Thursday night, right? Where he's clearly the lead back. And again, Rashad Penny didn't play in those games. So Collins is a flex until if Chris Carson even comes back. Oh, Jacksonville. Dan Arnold and Jamal Agnew combined for 22 targets in this game. Dan Arnold, Jamal Agnew, and Carlos Hyde combined for 30 targets. 30 of their 51 targets went to those three players. Jamal Agnew scores in this game. He's actually like not a terrible flex in deeper PPR leagues because his involvement's been really consistent with DJ Chark out. I hate to say it, but Laviska Shenault can be dropped. And it's not even really his fault. I still think Laviska Shenault's an immensely talented player. But when you have a player who is incredibly dangerous after the catch, can break tackles, you need to get the ball in his hands in space and quickly. When you have him playing on the perimeter, running vertical routes, he's not going to succeed. And it's so frustrating to watch. It really is. And like they gave him 1 carry for 8 yards. I thought they should give him more carries after James Robinson left this game. We'll talk about that in a second. But it's awful. Trevor Lawrence is not playing well. Like, I understand he's the number one pick of the draft and everything, but like he has not played well this year. Urban Meyer is a terrible head coach. The play calling is terrible. I mean, Marvin Jones is still got the upside on a given week to score twice and have 100 yards. He's a flex. Dan Arnold, though, needs to be added because of this offense, right? 10 targets, caught 8 for 68. He's been pretty heavily involved since becoming a part of this team a couple weeks ago. Tight end position is terrible. And with LaVisca being pretty much a guy just running deep routes, that's one less player to throw to, and that's why Dan Arnold's getting all these targets, because they're not using LaVisca Shenault how they should. So Dan Arnold can be added off waivers at tight end. James Robinson, though, left this game with what looked like an ankle injury. They're calling it, I think, a bruised heel. Schefter reported he's day-to-day. He is questionable. He's going to be questionable for the game against Buffalo. If he starts, if he's active, you're starting him and tempering expectations against Buffalo. If he sits, you can maybe start Carlos Hyde in deeper league. I honestly wouldn't. I don't want to start anybody on this team. I really don't. Other than James Robinson when he's active, I don't want to start anybody on this team. I'm so sick of watching this offense. I'm so sick of Urban Meyer. They're bad. They don't put their players in the best position to succeed. It took them like 3 weeks to understand that James Robinson is 7,000 times better than Carlos Hyde. They're just a bad organization, and I don't want to have any faith in them. I really don't. All right, a couple games left. Denver 17, Washington 10. I have one reaction from this game, and that's Antonio Gibson. He's been on the injury report with that shin that he's been battling all season. He continues to be on the injury report. But he practiced in full on Friday, was taken off the injury report. So it's like, okay, cool. Systems go. He's probably going to get a full workload. And then it's Buffalo rookie running back Jarrett Patterson, who leads the team with 11 carries. Gibson only has 8. Gibson does have 3 catches for 20 yards, but McKissick has 8 targets. And obviously, I mean, McKissick led this team in receiving in this game. I mean, Washington does get their bye in week 9. So it gives Gibson time to get fully healthy and rest up. But if Patterson becomes a part of it, if he continues to carve out a role in this offense, I don't see how you have any faith starting Gibson at all. Because their defense, it played fine today against Denver, whatever, but like, we know their defense has been bad this year. We know Gibson's not playing in 2-minute drills and third downs. It's bad, man. It's obviously a situation where Gibson, you already know he's not going to return value from where you drafted him this season, but that's kind of concerning to me that. And maybe it was okay, they're about to go to their bye. We don't want Gibson to re-injure the shin or whatever. But, I mean, he wasn't even on the injury report. And Patterson comes in and gets 11 carries. Like, don't love that. Bad game from Terry McLaurin in a bad matchup. 3 catches for 23 yards and 7 targets. He's had a lot. He's been a little bit more up and down than I would have liked this year. He's had a lot of really good games and a handful of really bad games. But the offense is bad. Heineke's been pretty bad since a couple good starts this season. We'll see if Ryan Fitzpatrick comes back anytime soon, but you're still starting Terry McLaurin as a number 2 receiver each week. For Denver, the backfield remains a split. Sutton, 2 for 40. Judy, 4 for 39. I mean, I tried to trade Sutton before Judy came back. Couldn't do it. He'll have some spike weeks, but it's like a full-on split everywhere, right? The backfield's a split. Judy, Patrick, Sutton, and Fant are all going to get targets. I mean, the team leader on targets for this team was 4, and it was 4 players with 4 targets. It was Fant, Javonte Williams, Jerry Judy, and Cortland Sutton. So, especially with a Denver team that wants to rely on their defense and running the football, unless they have games where Teddy Bridgewater is thrown 45 times, it's going to be tough to have a huge ceiling week for a lot of these receivers unless they're in a great matchup. So, to be fair, though, this was a great matchup against Washington's bad secondary. Let's move on to New Orleans 36, Tampa Bay 27. Jameis Winston, we got the word, suffered a torn ACL. He will be out for the season. So Trevor Siemian came in and was good enough, I guess, to defeat Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. Taysom Hill, obviously, out with a concussion. We'll see. I mean, if he's back, he probably starts, and it obviously changes the dynamic of this offense, right? We saw Taysom last year; he was with Michael Thomas, and he was pretty accurate in the intermediate parts of the game, which is really all this Saints offense asks of you, right? But I look at it, and they obviously acquired Mark Ingram, which resulted actually in Alvin Kamara playing a season low in snaps. Now, Kamara still got, what, like, how many touches did he get in this game? 19 carries. So, 22 touches in this game. Obviously, Kamara is not going to see 30 touches again this season. And that's not what the Saints want. That's not what you should want. You want him getting the high-value touches in space and everything like that. And, yeah, the numbers other than touchdown were bad. Again, it's a Tampa Bay run defense. Don't expect much ever against them. But, yeah, Ingram got, you know, a lot of snaps. 8 touches. I think he's going to have more of a role than Tony Jones did before he went down. So, obviously, you're starting Kamara every week, but, you know, it's interesting that he played a season low in snaps. And maybe that was just home game, Mark Ingram's first game back with the team. Maybe it was just them wanting to get him involved and get him going and fire up the crowd and stuff like that. And he actually looked pretty good. So, but I'm trying to right now, I'm going to use the FTN Fantasy Splits tool, which you can look at over at FTNFantasy.com. I'm going to use this on the air right now to look at Alvin Kamara's targets alongside Taysom Hill last season, because that was a concern for a lot of people. And I'm, again, expecting at some point Taysom Hill to be the starting quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. So look at Kamara. We'll go to 2020, which was last year. And we will take a look at with Taysom Hill. So, and for some reason, I can't get Taysom Hill on here. Interesting. Maybe I'm messing something up, but I can find that. And obviously, like, there were some less appealing numbers in terms of, you know, receptions and everything. But there's also the concern that Taysom Hill starts to, they call Taysom Hill's number in close. And I mean, I'm pretty sure he got concussed earlier in the year because they threw him a deep ball. It's like, you got to be smarter with him, because now Jameis is done for the season. Like, you don't have, like, you got to keep Taysom Hill healthy. So there's still a chance that they give him carries inside the five, which could hurt Kamara's upside on given weeks, but you're obviously not benching him or anything like that. For Tampa Bay, Mike Evans saw a lot of Marshawn Lattimore in this game, as expected, finishes with 2 for 48, but he had a 41-yard touchdown on Lattimore, so saved his day there. But a huge game from Chris Godwin, 8 catches for 140 yards and a touchdown on 12 targets. Now, back-to-back huge games from him that have come with Antonio Brown out, so something to consider there. Gronk was active in this game, didn't catch a pass, and then left later with back spasms. So Tampa Bay gets their bye at a good point, right? I mean, Gronk not 100%. Antonio Brown obviously hurt, coming off a loss. So, you know, Fournette, bad game. Didn't expect much against a defense that's probably been better against the run so far this season than Tampa Bay and the New Orleans Saints. Still was involved in the passing game a little bit. Brady had a couple turnovers, but still had 4 touchdowns, 375 yards. I mean, just really not much to talk about in this game. We just got to see how they look coming out of the bye in week 10 with Antonio Brown, if he's back potentially, if Gronk's recovered and fully healthy. Because obviously those two give this offense a completely different dimension. All right, let's close it out because I want to talk about Sunday Night Football. Cowboys 20, Vikings 16. How about Cooper Rush? What a rush, right? He was pretty impressive, right? 325 yards, 2 scores. One interception, 1 fumble. It was a lot of great game plan and play calling by Kellen Moore. But he made some good throws. I mean, the touchdown pass to Cedric Wilson was a nice throw. Made a couple of nice throws to Amari Cooper down the sideline, including the game-winning touchdown on the fade route. Cooper had a nice game here. 8 catches for 122 yards and a touchdown on 13 targets. And that's why you don't bench guys like CeeDee Lamb, right? 6 for 112 on 8 targets. Although, what, 35 that came on that trick play from Cedric Wilson, who, by the way, Cedric Wilson, that was an awesome throw. The Cowboys tried to run the football in this game, as you'd expect. They didn't really do anything. The runs they had with Zeke in this game were just kind of, you know, up the gut, not very inspiring. Zeke had a bad game, but he had one of the plays of the night on 3rd and 13, caught a, you know, dump off and ran through like 3 defenders to get the first down that set up the Amari Cooper touchdown pass. I mean, look, Dallas is 6-1 with a huge win here. They face an AFC opponent in the Broncos next week. There's a chance that they just say, you know what, Cooper Rush showed us enough that we can win against Denver. And even if we don't, we're 6-1 now. We're 6-1. Maybe we give Dak another week off. So that is definitely something to keep an eye on. Tyron Smith and Trayvon Diggs left this game with injuries, but I saw a report that I believe both are expected to be fine. So we'll keep an eye on that. And Michael Gallup might be back next week. Hasn't played since week one, so Michael Gallup might be back for the Cowboys this week. Really disappointing game for the Vikings. I mean, their first drive was great. Kirk Cousins, multiple plays down the field. They throw a touchdown pass to Adam Thielen. They did nothing after that. They were like 1 for 12 or 2 for 12 on third down in this game. They were conservative on offense despite being the ones going against the quarterback making his first career start. Justin Jefferson a dud from him. Thielen had 9 targets, caught 6 for 78 yards and a touchdown. Like, it was a very, like, the Vikings should be ashamed. I mean, they were so, so conservative on offense. I mean, CJ Ham had 3 targets in this game. They threw a couple screens that had no shot in this contest. Like, and they did take a shot to Justin Jefferson that should have been a potential 50-yard touchdown. Jefferson slowed down on his route, then had to dive for the ball and couldn't come up with it. But, yeah, I mean, Dalvin Cook, 18 carries to Madison's 2. He's obviously the lead back. Didn't catch a pass in this game, which was a little bit concerning. But just overall, the Vikings offense after the first drive, like, super, super, super disappointing. Cousins only has 184 yards and a touchdown in this game. Like, that was bad. I mean, that was a bad loss by the Minnesota Vikings. Now they're 3-4. I mean, not saying, like, Dallas. Like, Dallas is a good team. Like, I don't think the Vikings should have won that game handily, but, like, the fact that they were played so conservative on offense, like, it just made no sense to me. So, obviously, better days ahead for Justin Jefferson. But, yeah, that was very disappointing. So, and that'll do it for the Week 8 slate. Again, one more game on Monday between the Chiefs and the New York Giants. I need 9.6 points combined from Tyreek Hill and Graham Gano. So, I'll be watching that game very closely. If I don't get that, I'll be very disappointed. But hopefully the rest of your matchups go well. Week 9 starts next on Tuesday, pretty much, right? Deeper and I will be back on Tuesday for the Waiver Wire episode of Fade the Chalk. Wednesday will be the Trade Podcast, and Thursday will be the DFS episode where I bring on a guest and go game by game, breaking out all the action from a DFS perspective for week number 9. Hopefully everybody had a great week 8 and a great weekend. Best of luck on Monday night, whether you're playing Showdown. We'll have a live stream with, David Jones, Derek Brown. We have great, great live stream and live stream analysts to break down the Showdown slate. We've had a ton of analysts take down some Showdown contests this year already, so you do not want to miss that ahead of this game between the Chiefs and Giants. Thanks for listening. As always, have a great Monday. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday here on Fade the Chalk, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Peace out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.